Back at it with you, Round the Wireless, brand new week, Monday, March 3rd, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I wondered out loud if Connecticut Democratic U.S. Senator Chris Murphy went a bit too far in calling the Trump White House an arm of the Kremlin. Connecticut Republican Party Chairman Ben Proto dropped by to talk about Senator Murphy's opposition to the Trump White House foreign policy. Republican State Senate Leader Steve Harding talked about a request for the U.S. Justice Department to possibly investigate the ongoing Bridgeport absentee ballot scandal. And CTNewsJunkie.com columnist and Substack blogger Terry Cowgill returned to the show after a multi-week layoff because he was dealing with hip replacement. All right, so as we kick off the week here on this Monday, the 3rd of March, 2025, how about we do this? It's a brand new complete month for us here at Connecticut Today, a brand new week, going to get warm toward the end of the week. So what better time could we have picked here for another exciting edition of Did This Go Too Far? Or Is It Inappropriate? Or Are You Embarrassed? Or Hey, Can You Believe This Guy? Whatever you want to call it. Shall we go ahead and do that today? I think at 2:09, it's a Bonnie thing to do. One of my favorite politicians of all time, because he gives me show prep material, as we call it in the business, every freaking day, Connecticut Democratic U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, whom we've been trying to get on this radio station for a long time. Won't come on. Jim Himes comes on, Richard Blumenthal comes on, but apparently one of our major D.C. folk who handle Connecticut's business in the world's most deliberative chambers, Chris Murphy, won't come on. What would I ask Senator Murphy? Or what would Melissa ask him? Or what would Lisa Wexler in the midday ask him if we were to be graced with his presence? Well, he might want to comment on this. Now, you know, Friday, and we'll get back to this, the big dust-up at the White House with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and Volodymyr Zelensky. So listen, we'll get into that. Some new stuff over the weekend on that. I've got some thoughts. Also, a lot of stuff on the Bridgeport election squabble going on. We'll get to that, too. However, you tell me whether this was inappropriate. Because Mr. Murphy is there on national television representing us in the state of Connecticut, in Fairfield County, in New Haven County, in Hartford County, in Litchfield County, all of the wonderful counties of our beautiful Constitution State, the real DPRC. If Mr. Murphy, you tell me if he was appropriate in calling the White House the arm of the Kremlin. Now, I understand that there's opposition out there. I get it. The Democrats try to make it as difficult as possible for the Republicans. The Republicans try to make it as difficult as possible for the Democrats. That's how the game is played. I get it. I understand that. But, you know, you hear from Jim Himes primarily in the mornings with Melissa here on WYCC for Fairfield County. You've heard from Richard Blumenthal in the mornings with Melissa, and when I fill in for Melissa, which I will again next week, and with Lisa Wexler in the midday. They seem measured, calibrated in their critique of the White House, and that's fine. Both sides go at it. But here you have Chris Murphy, who is clearly trying to stake out a presidential run, I think, in 2028, and God bless him if he wants to do that. Listen, the guy's got a seat for life. He's safe. He's just about the right age, good-looking guy, 51 years old, whatever. Popular around the state. He goes on his walk every year from a PR point of view. That's fine. And I get it that he's the opposition. But over the weekend, Chris Murphy said the White House is an arm of the Kremlin. Now, I will have that for you momentarily. You tell me, and again, our number, 203-333-9422, 333-WYCC. Once again, 203-333-9422, 333-WYCC, if you want to call. Or you can text. We rolled out the texting to that on the show the other day. So call or text at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Straight ahead, I'll let you hear exactly what Senator Murphy said. And you tell me, is it just too much to say, no matter how much he agrees with President Trump, should a representative of the voters of Connecticut be allowed to say, or should he say with good conscience, that the White House is an arm of the Kremlin? Open phones at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Call or text to that number. Listen, I get being in the opposition. I understand it. The Democrats would be remiss if they didn't honestly criticize Donald Trump and the Trump White House. I get that. There's nothing wrong doing that. And obviously, the Republicans do the same thing. But at what level do you have to be responsible for what you say, right? The Democrats already say, always say, well, look at what Trump says. He's reckless. And yes, sometimes he is reckless. And it drives me nuts. But is Chris Murphy for real here? Now, and look, the guy was going to be Secretary of State, likely under a Kamala Harris administration. So he's upset. He's cranked off. I get it. I understand it. But is this embarrassing to the state of Connecticut and to you voters in Fairfield and Hartford and New Haven counties who may have voted for this guy? So he's on the other day after the dust up with Zelensky and Vance and Donald Trump. And by the way, the opening to Saturday Night Live with this was very funny. They nailed it, I thought. The people who were imitating everybody and Elon Musk as well. Listen to what Chris Murphy said. And as a Connecticut voter, are you okay with this? Are you saying, yeah, go get it? Or are you saying, what? What in the heck are you talking about?
What's your reaction to what you just heard from the president's national security advisor? Do you think there's hope of salvaging this relationship with Ukraine?
So it is absolutely shameful what is happening right now. The White House has become an arm of the Kremlin.
Huh? What? Wait a minute. What did you say, Senator?
What's your reaction to what you just heard from the president's national security advisor? Do you think there's hope of salvaging this relationship with Ukraine?
So it is absolutely shameful what is happening right now. The White House has become an arm of the Kremlin. Every single day you hear from the national security advisor, from the president of the United States, from his entire national security team, Kremlin talking points. For the last week, the White House has been pretending as if Ukraine started this war. That's essentially saying that Poland invaded Germany at the beginning of World War II. There are still facts in this world. And the fact is this: Vladimir Putin is a brutal dictator. Russia started this war. And the entire pretext for that meeting yesterday was an attempt to rewrite history in order to sign a deal with Putin that hands Putin Ukraine. That is disastrous for U.S. national security. That means that China will be on the march. Putin may not stop. America may be at war with a nuclear power.
Okay, we'll go back to that later. Well, what's his idea? You see, and look, I'm all for criticizing Trump. I get it. An arm of the Kremlin. Why? Why would Donald Trump be an arm of the Kremlin? And why does Chris Murphy say this? Well, number one, you don't think arm of the Kremlin was focus grouped? I mean, come on, Senator. Arm of the Kremlin. Stop. What's his idea for ending the war? And again, this is the thing that was making my head explode all over the weekend. Trump sucks. Trump's this. Trump's Putin's lap boy. Okay, what's your idea? And I'm not saying Trump is right. I'm not saying that. Arm of the Kremlin? Really? Who comes up with that? Arm of the Kremlin. Come on. Jeez. Now, we'll play a little bit more of that later, and kudos to Dana Bash, where she says, hey, but this, that, and the other. And, you hear Chris Murphy kind of back off once he gets the talking points out there. Come on. Arm of the Kremlin? Stop. Jeez. Again, this is all focus grouped. Carol in Orange leads us off today. Hi, Carol. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
What's up, Carol? Yeah, what do you got for us?
Well, Chris Murphy he won't come on your show because you might question him about his psychotic comments. I've emailed him several times about how he's embarrassing the state of Connecticut, but he doesn't even answer constituents' emails.
No answer from his office, Carol? Is that what you're saying?
Yep, nothing.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. Appreciate it. I mean, you know, at least answer the woman's email. Jeez. Come on. Arm of the Kremlin? Stop. The Kremlin. That's the big thing now. Hey, what word do we try this week? Succotash? No, that won't work. How about Kremlin? Mike in Trumbull's here. Mike, good afternoon, sir. How are you on this Monday?
Good, Paul. Good. Hey, you know what? When I first saw the Zelensky and Vance and Trump show down there at the Oval Office, I thought maybe they were a little rough on them. Then I find out when I read Michael Goodwin's article from the New York Post that Senator Murphy got to him first, poisoned his mind. And when he got in there, he was all defensive and all rude and everything. And I was like, wait a minute. Do you remember the first term that Trump, the first 4 years, Murphy went to Iran? You remember that?
Yeah.
He went to Iran?
Yeah.
But this is the second time now he's pulling this.
And Mike, if you notice in that article, Murphy wasn't shy about it. He says, hey, we just got out of a meeting and Zelensky's going to do this. Yeah. And Zelensky's, really, Senator, really?
Yeah, this is before he met with Trump.
I know.
So he was all, this guy, he doesn't answer my calls or emails or none either. You know, and he knows me a little bit. I know Blumenthal better, but
unbelievable. And you know what? Thank you, Mike. At least Senator Blumenthal's a little more measured in his criticism. But come on, arm of the Kremlin. That's all focus grouped, folks, and both parties do it. Please. Now, listen, he's got a right to say that, but after a while, you become so crazed that people say, oh, again, which diminishes your message. See, the bloviating by both sides hurts their message. Got a text here, and you can text us at 203-333-9422. Text message, Senator Murphy has as much right to say that the White House is in the arm of the Kremlin as Donald J. Trump has a right to do all the name-calling, mocking, and outright lying he spews. Connecticut voters elected Senator Murphy knowing his background and feelings. He was chosen by us to represent us, just as DJT was chosen, unfortunately, by some Americans to represent them. Okay. But the point I would say to that is, the more hyperbolic you are, appealing to your base, the less you become believable to the other side. And by the way, you notice that, and again, there's no getting away from this. Every article you read, the New York Times, the Atlantic, the New Yorker, USA Today, Chris Murphy from here in Connecticut is kind of been named the designated attack dog here. So did he go a little too far? Maybe you don't like Trump and you hate him, but you say to Chris Murphy, hey, Chris, you know, you're right on the edge there of appealing to people, but also, is this a turnoff? Now, again, he can say whatever he wants. I get it. But there's already articles coming out now in the right-wing press. Somebody said it the other day. They said, well, I guess the Dems have recycled Hillary Clinton, and now it's Chris Murphy. So you tell me. Calling the White House the arm of the Kremlin. You okay with that? You cheering that? Or do you look at that, do you wince and say, look, Chris, I don't like Trump, but that's a little much. All right, Ben Proto joins us right now. Ben, of course, the chair of the Connecticut Republican Party, and Ben has issued a statement regarding some of the stuff that our junior U.S. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy said over the weekend. Ben, it's Paul. Good afternoon, sir. How are you, Ben? How you been?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are things in Paul Land?
Oh, Paul Land is great. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I'm alive. I'm good. I'm breathing, whatever. Well, I got to tell you, Ben, I listen, as I said earlier in the show, of course the Democrats are going to oppose the Republicans are going to oppose the Democrats, whatever. But when I heard, Ben, the arm of the Kremlin line over the weekend, I went, did that go a little far? What are your thoughts on that?
Look, you know, I think Chris Murphy and the Democrats have to remember who's responsible for foreign policy in this country, and it's the President of the United States, not the United States Senate. They have a role to play at some point, but the setting of that policy and the implementation and administration of that policy rests with the president. I think, you know, what Chris Murphy and his colleagues did just before the meeting with in the Oval Office with President Zelensky and President Trump and Vice President Vance was a tremendous disservice, not only to the people they represent here in the United States, but also to the Ukrainian people. You know, Paul, that mineral rights deal would give the United States an economic interest in Ukraine. And if there's one thing that we're good at, it's protecting our economic interests around the world. So once we got that interest, we suddenly had that interest to make sure Ukraine was safe and that it was not, you know, and this war was being brought to a swift end. And so I think, you know, with Chris Murphy is, look, Chris Murphy's trying to decide what he wants to be when he grows up. He's clearly got his eye on, you know, a national office in 2028 or taking over for Chuck Schumer when Chuck Schumer steps down as the Democrat leader. And that's fine. Everyone should have a goal in life, I guess. I mean, that's Chris's. But, you know, when you're doing stuff to that actually is hurting, you know, the people you represent, not only here in Connecticut, but across this country and really across the globe, then your political desires are outweighing your job, which is to ensure the protection of our country. And I think, you know, he way overstepped. You know, and Paul, you're a bit of a history buff, I know. And, you know, if we go back to Richard Nixon, and, you know, when Richard Nixon went to China and everyone was very upset about Richard Nixon
going to China.
And it was a big hullabaloo. But the strategic value of what Richard Nixon did in the 1970s by going to China was he split Russia and China. Right. Suddenly we had an ally or at least a relationship with China. We were beginning to have an economic interest with China. We were beginning to do things with China, and we pushed China and Russia apart to keep that access from coming together. If you look at what Trump is doing now, and I don't know if this is what he's doing, but man, it sure looks a lot like the Nixon-China situation where he's trying to push Russia and China apart, but he's doing it with Russia this time as opposed to China, because he's already said China is the enemy. China is the major threat to the United States. He has said that time and time again, and quite frankly, the Democrats have said that time and time again. So if there's a way to divide Russia from China, to keep that access from forming, then I think the president is doing exactly what he should be doing, and that's protecting our interests. And I hope Zelensky comes back to the table, signs that agreement, we get our economic interest there, and suddenly we have the ability to bring this stupid Ukrainian-Russian war to an end.
Yeah, and Ben, the thing I found interesting in that you mentioned that, because I didn't quite understand. I was saying, well, geez, the mining thing and the rare earths, okay, I get it, but is that going to stop gunfire? And there was some columnist over the weekend that said, don't laugh at it, because, as you said, if there is now a burgeoning or a solid U.S. business interest in Ukraine, it might make Putin think twice of saying, well, wait a minute, those aren't troops there. Those are sands for security people. That's a mining operation. Do I want to risk further deteriorating the relationship with the U.S. if I fire on them? So I kind of think that's kind of what your thinking is here, and as it was explained over the weekend. Now, would it work? I don't know, but I guess that's what why they're thinking that first before U.S. troops.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, going back to the original question, you know, clearly I think the Democrats overstepped, way overstepped, and as a result brought about what happened in the Oval Office last week, which, you know, clearly was not a good thing for the people of Ukraine.
No.
And for Zelensky was a really bad outcome for them. And, you know, I think he needs to figure out, you know, how he can fix this and get this relationship back on track. You know, Trump has committed. He committed during the campaign. He committed when he took the oath, and he has committed since January 20th. to bringing about a ceasefire that works for everybody and ending that war. You know, when you look at what's happened over the last 3+ years, Paul, and you know these numbers, how many, you know, multiple, you know, million plus people are dead, you know, in three years, you know, probably close to $1 trillion, if not more, has been spent on this war. To what end? There's no end in sight. More people are going to die. More money is going to be wasted. And it needs to come to an end. And, you know, and Donald Trump is trying to do that. I think Zelensky, you know, it's unclear what Zelensky wants at this point. Does he want this to end, or does he really think he can defeat Russia? You know, and to this point, I mean, you fought him to a standstill.
Yeah. Which is, and again, nobody is denying the will and the courage and the fortitude of the Ukrainian people. I mean, my God, to stand up to Russia on your doorstep. My God, the guts that takes. But again, Ben, the question is, and I've been mentioning it with callers here the past few days, how do you defeat Russia that has thousands of nuclear warheads? How does that happen?
You don't. And you know, there's always been the concern, I think, that Putin would use a tactical nuclear weapon, which, you know, if that were to happen, at some point you've involved NATO. And once you've involved NATO, you've involved the United States. We have certain treaty commitments that require us to do certain things at that point, including putting American boots on the ground in a shooting war. And I don't think there's anybody in this country that wants that.
No.
And so, you know, I really think that, you know, President Zelensky needs to figure out how to fix this. You know, they need to come back to this table without, you know, Chris Murphy and the Democrats. That's not their job. Negotiate the appropriate deals, you know, work together to bring about an end to this stupid war. And let's get everybody back on track in that part of the world. Because once this spills over into a European conflict, then Trump is right. Zelensky has created World War III.
Ben Proto, Ben, thanks. Appreciate the time. Be good. Be careful out there, Ben. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Look forward, Paul. Thanks for having me on, as always.
All right. Thanks. Ben Proto, their state Republican Party chair, who put out a statement today chiding Chris Murphy. You just heard in the news, top of the hour there, a lot of Bridgeport heavyweights from the Democratic side saying, hey, and I kind of agree with this, let's not rush to judgment on this Bridgeport absentee ballot thing. But a lot of folks still I speak to, either personally or on social media, saying, hey, is this Bridgeport thing going to get snuffed out? I said, well, I hope not. And the Republican caucus in Hartford, the leaders are saying, hey, just to make sure, let's bring in the federal Department of Justice and get Pam Bondi to do something with that. Joining us right now, State Senate Republican leader Steve Harding, friend of the radio station. Hey, Steve, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, I love your show. It's always great to be on with you. And thank you so much for having me. And also, quickly, best wishes to Terry. He's actually a constituent of mine.
Oh, really?
Northwest corner. Yeah, he's a good man, and I am wishing him well, and I'm happy to hear that he's on the path to recovery. So I'm looking forward to hearing him on your show.
Steve. Yeah, I will tell him that in the next hour. Thanks, Steve. I'll pass that along.
Too.
So Steve, is there a fear maybe among you folks and others in the conference and the caucus that even though there's a state elections enforcement commission and I guess some state officials are involved, do you really think the feds need to step in here? Talk a little about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do. And the reason is because we've seen time and time again the local state authorities in regards to these election oversight organizations we have here in Connecticut never take the proper steps to actually properly investigate and prosecute and address these election fraud crimes and allegations. And time and time again in Bridgeport, we've seen what went on there. We've seen, interestingly enough and sad enough, in the governor's budget, he proposed to remove this Bridgeport election moderator right in the wake of this councilman coming out openly and saying the governor and the Democratic Party basically told me to do this.
And Steve, we're talking, what, $125,000, $150,000 in a $52 billion 2-year budget? Really? How does that make any sense?
when we talk about priorities, wouldn't you think that that protecting the foundation of a democracy in a city where time and time and time again we've seen a democracy upended, we've seen judges forced into situations where they've had to order brand new elections because of how ripe fraud is there, and the fact that your priority is to remove the individual or individuals that are involved in overseeing, making sure that democracy there is working effectively and legally, I think it speaks to everything you need to know about how the Democratic Party and those that are in control and democratic organizations overseeing elections, what they think about or how seriously they actually react to election fraud and what goes on in the state. And so that's why we've kind of taken this rather extraordinary step of taking it to the federal level. And hoping that the federal level will take it as serious as it should be taken and something is investigated here.
So, Steve, what is the process here? I mean, can just the Republican lawmakers send a letter or an official contact to Pam Bondi, the AG? Can she step in here, or does that request have to be made by Attorney General Tong or Governor Lamont? How technically would that work, if at all?
My understanding is I think the letter, the correspondence that we've written as Republicans is plenty, is more than enough for the Attorney General's office to initiate an investigation and to take it further from there, depending on what they find in their investigations. I think the Attorney General of the United States has broad authorities, particularly surrounding, you know, potential election fraud, mm-hmm. And that's been committed or even continuing to be committed, which is bad and scary to think. My understanding is that this correspondence could potentially lead to the Attorney General's office and the Department of Justice taking steps to finally address this issue. And again, we've seen the Democratic Party step away from their responsibilities when it comes down to addressing election fraud in the state, particularly as they've handled Bridgeport. And I think we've made the message clear in the correspondence to the Attorney General's office and to DOJ that we believe that it's now time for the federal government to step in, because it's clear the Democrats in control in Hartford have really no appetite to actually do what's right here.
And Steve, I was shocked, and I talked at length on my show about this, to see that Stephanie Thomas, a duly elected constitutional officer, secretary of the state here in Connecticut, who's entrusted with making sure the elections go well, testified the other day, Steve, that they don't have her department as being undercut money-wise. And she said, if I recall this correctly, that there's not enough money for cities and towns to do early voting again. I mean, here everybody, Steve, was being a champion of early voting, yet, hey, cities and towns, you figure it out. Again, Steve, this is one reason why if they ever elected me to do what you guys and gals do, they'd be rolling me out of there in one day, because my mind would actually freak out. I mean, what's up with that? You have a Secretary of the State saying, well, we don't have enough money.
I think it speaks to the overarching issue that we have surrounding elections in Connecticut and how the Democratic majority handles it in Hartford. It is unbelievably short-sighted. And so I think policies often are enacted based purely on politics and what they see as potentially political gain for them to enact election laws, which are helpful towards their candidates being having a better chance of success at the polls, as opposed to pragmatic policy. And I think what is unfortunate, Paul, is that myself and the Senate Republicans demanded that when they were crafting these government elections and government oversight committees this past year in the new legislative session, we said, look, we need to have bipartisan composition of these committees. Because the people of the state deserve that. I think people of all political stripes that are logical look at this stuff and say, look, this shouldn't be partisan. It should be just practical discussions about how to enact fair and safe democratic elections. And unfortunately, what we see in Hartford far too often is, how can we utilize the election laws to our gain? and how do we enact these policies as quick as possible? And that's ultimately what you get with these no excuse absentee ballot, with these early voting, what we don't have funding for, is that the loopholes are not tied up. The T's are not crossed, the I's are not dotted, and then you get this short-sighted policy where we're having a difficult time making sure that the elections are done safely, and also, more importantly, well, I would say just as importantly, making sure the towns have the finances available to them to ensure that the elections are done correctly and safely as well.
Okay. Steve Harding. Steve, keep us updated on all this stuff, okay? Appreciate the time, Steve.
Thank you, Paul. Always a pleasure, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. Steve Harding there, State Senate Republican leader. Terry Cowgill rejoins us. It's been a minute. Terry, how are you? How do you feel?
Well, I'm better, but I'll tell you, it's been a long road to recovery. For those listeners who don't read my Substack,
What's wrong with them? Number one, they should be reading your Substack. But
I'll get a plug in for it eventually. But about a month and a half ago, I was visiting a friend in Durham, North Carolina, and he works at Duke and went to Duke, and he's very proud of his association there. We were going to the Duke Miami game that night.
Nice.
We were playing on a tennis court. We were hacking around with pickleball and pickleball rackets, and I approached the net. I skidded on a twig or something. I did a roll, and I broke my hip. It is by far the worst injury I've ever had. It was devastating, and I don't wish it on anybody. And I'm sorry for being gone for 6 weeks, because that's how long it's taken me to feel even slightly normal.
Wow. Well, you sound great. And one of my old college roommates, Terry, in his early to mid-60s, as I am and I think you are, he's a fit guy. Not that you're not, but he worked out every day. He blew out his Achilles playing pickleball.
Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah, absolutely. And I have osteoporosis too, so I didn't even know that at the time.
Wow.
So that little tumble I took 20 years ago, I mean, I don't know, I probably would have just gotten bruised or something,
Wow, so that the osteoporosis caused it. Wow.
Yeah, I think the bone was sufficiently weakened that I fell on it, and there was just nothing to protect me. So, boom.
Wow.
Well, and then I had a full hip replacement.
Oh.
And plus they had to put in cement and screws. And it was a nightmare, and I still feel, the pain. It's still stiff. But I've come a long way.
Well, good.
I'm raring to go.
All right. And by the way, the State Senate Republican leader, Steve Harding, when he heard the promo that you were going to be on, Steve wanted me to express his best wishes to you. So he was on.
Thank you. Steve is my state senator.
Yeah.
I thank him very much for that.
Yeah. Well, this leaves us a few minutes here. You called what happened in the White House and the Oval Office the other day. I'm sorry, Steve, but I think you're right. Performance art there. Yeah. Terry, dive into that a little.
Yeah. Well, the reason I call it performance art is that it was just a bizarre setting anyway to have this diplomatic meeting in the Oval Office. That's great because it sends a meeting about the sends a message about the gravity of the situation and everything. But to have all of these cameras in there and these journalists, they wanted performance out of this. They wanted the world to see what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And it cheapened the whole thing. And I think and I know you probably got a lot of listeners who would disagree with me.
About 50-50. It's about 50-50, honestly, Terry, seriously.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, here this man was, I understand there's a lot of people who don't like Zelensky, here he was. I didn't hear him raise his voice at all, and yet he was being accused of browbeating Donald Trump and raising his voice. And at one point, J.D. Vance said, why are you relitigating this in front of the media? And then I said to myself, who invited the media? Not Zelensky. They were all there in this scrum. Somebody asked him why he wasn't wearing a suit. And nobody asked that of Elon Musk 2 weeks ago when he showed up wearing a T-shirt and he had a kid on his shoulders. Anyway, it really gave me the wrong feeling. And this is a textbook case in how not to do conduct diplomacy. So
no.
I was very disappointed in it, and I hope that they can get back to the table and work out, because I thought this minerals deal was okay. So it wasn't ideal, but it obviously the whole thing blew up and the deal is no longer on the table. The signing ceremony was canceled, and they're all gone.
It puts, I finally found out, Terry, the reason they're doing this, or Trump's thinking on this, is that, well, we may not have troops there, but if there are U.S. interests in the country, that might deter Putin further. But you know what, Terry, just a final point here, I think, at least people, because, you know, Terry, the war had kind of faded a little bit, although it shouldn't have, into the background. Mm-hmm. At least everybody's talking about this. At least now, this has really smashed the glass kitchen table here. And at least now the world is saying, hey, how does this end, really?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And, of course, after leaving the White House, Zelensky went and met with Prime Minister Keir Starmer in London. So this thing is now taking on a life of its own, and it is regenerating as a big story with a sense of urgency now, I think, after this confrontation in the White House.
Yeah. Well, Terry, great to have you back. Folks, Terry Cargill every Monday here in the 5 o'clock hour. Check out his stuff on the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and, of course, substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, for God's sake, take it easy, will you? Let me know when you're back to, as they say, baseball activities, all right? Will you do that for me?
I never want to hear the words pickleball ever again.
Terry, thanks. Be good, and we'll chat next Monday, sir. Thank you, sir.
All right,
there you go. Terry Cargill, Connecticut guy, splits time now between Connecticut in the Northwest Hills and Texas.